This is a quick overview of Chapter 2, Statistical Literacy 2009. Slide 2, reviewing Chapter 1. Statistics are typically used as evidence to support something disputable in an argument, such as a generalization, a prediction, specification, or causation. The basic admonition of statistical literacy is take care. Take care. And the four letters in care also stand for the four kinds of influence on a statistic. C for context, A for assembly, R for randomness, E for error. Slide 3. To review, context, that's the factors that are taken into account by a variety of devices. Also involves the factors, the confounders that were not taken into account. Assembly, these are the choices in defining things, measuring things, or presenting. Randomness, the influence of chance. And finally, error, systematic deviation of the statistics from some underlying reality. Now, typically statistics come in the form of an association. Association is not causation, but is often evidence of some causation. Two kinds of association, one involving measurements, the other involving groups. We're going to work on groups because that's the most common. So, group associations typically involve arithmetic comparisons. Yes, there are the non-arithmetic ones, such as men are taller than women, women live longer than men, but the arithmetic comparison gives some idea of the magnitude, the effect. Is it material? We're going to look at three kinds of arithmetic comparisons. The first, a simple difference comparison. We're going to use the words test and base to talk about the two items being compared. The base is the basis, and in this simple difference, it's preceded by the word than. So, the test, men, and then the verb is or are, depending on the subject matter involved, and then the math is test minus the base. So if the average man is 69 inches, and the average woman is 65 inches, we'd say men are 4 inches taller. More or less are the most common, but in English we have the whole comparative set of words, words ending in ER, such as taller, shorter, bigger, smaller. Here we would say men are taller than women. Men are 4 inches taller than women. Than indicates the basis of the comparison. The second kind of comparison is the ratio. So, say that interest rates today are 6%. A year ago they were 4%. We'd say the 6% is 1.5 times as much as the 4%. Interest rates today are 1.5 times as much as interest rates last year. The second as indicates the base. In English, sometimes that as much as is left out. So you would say 6 is 1.5 times 4. But you have to realize, under the hood, there's that times as much as. There's the as much as following the times. Turning to slide 5. The third kind of arithmetic comparison is a relative difference that comes in two forms, a times difference and a percent difference. The percent difference is the most common. As the same layout, it starts with the test, ends with the base. There are other forms, but this is the simplest one to deal with. So if we're comparing our 6% interest rate today and our 4% interest rate a year ago, 6 is how much more than 4? Well, it's 2 more than 4 is a simple difference. But here, you see the arithmetic? Test minus base over base. It's scaled by the base. So 6 minus 4 in the numerator is 2. Scaled by 4 in the denominator is 1/2 times 100. 6 is 50% more than 4. Interest rates today are 50% higher than a year ago. The times difference has the same math. You don't multiply by 100. You don't have the percent sign. So we would say interest rates today are 1.5 times I'm sorry, interest rates today are 0.5 times more, half again as much, than interest rates a year ago. Now, there's one unique feature about the simple difference. We can see it when we compare two percentages such as 15 and 10%. There's a simple difference. You'd want to say 15% is 5% more than 10%. Jumping down to the percent difference, you'd say 15% is half again, 50% more than 10%. But these two statements, the first and the last, cannot both be true. The wording's identical, and yet the center number differs. So, percentage points are introduced to untangle this problem. Whenever you have a difference in two percentages, we talk about percentage points. So the simple difference would be 15% is 5 percentage points more than 10%. Slide 7. You can do assembly on these comparisons. Here we have the example, 99% of married men, 90% of married women are happy with their spouse. We can minimize the difference by saying men are 10% more likely, comparing 99 with 90. 9 more is a simple difference, divided by 90 in the base, gives a tenth, 10%. Men are 10% more likely to be happy than are women. Or we can look at the complements. 1% of the married men are unhappy, 10% of the married women are unhappy. Women are 10 times as likely to be unhappy. 10% is 10 times 1%. This is assembly. The choice of what to use as a base and what to make the comparison on. Slide 8, reviewing from chapter 1 again. Recall the baseball example. The season wins, averaging out at 72. The Yankees above average, the Mets below average. But once we take into account budget, the diagonal best fit line, the Yankees are below budget, the Mets are above budget, and we can say that given the resources available, the Yankee manager didn't do as well as the Met manager. Now this is really different to see numbers changing depending on what you take into account. You haven't seen this in any of your math up until this point, but it's critical in understanding statistics. Now we turn to study design. You may not see how this is going to play out, but stay with it for a bit. The two primary categories of study design are experiments, where the researcher intentionally alters one or more of the factors to study the effects, or an observational study, where the researcher investigator just observes without intervening or assigning. Most studies are observational, even in medical journals. They're cheaper and faster. Slide 10. Studies can be of two kinds, whether experiment or observational study. They can be longitudinal, involving measurements at two different times, typically a before and after type of study, or cross-sectional, or cutting across different things all measured at the same time or during a same time period, such as death rates. Again, cross-sectional are cheaper, more common. Longitudinal, more expensive. And in both cases, the longitudinal and the experiment are going to be the ones that are more desirable. Slide 11. I said longitudinal was better, but longitudinal is still susceptible. Here we have golf camp. Before golf camp, score of 45. After golf camp, score of 42. You might want to say, well, this is the effect of golf camp. It may be, but it could also be influenced by other time-varying confounders. What else could have happened at the same time? Well, maybe the person got new clubs. Maybe the person was doing a lot of practicing while they were in golf camp. It wasn't the golf camp, but it was the practice. There are a number of explanations for this. Just because it's longitudinal doesn't mean that the treatment, golf camp in this case, is the cause of the difference. We need to eliminate confounders. Next item on slide 12, a controlled study. For most people, a controlled study has the connotation of an experiment. The researcher's in control of something. That's not what controlled means. Controlled means there's at least two groups involved in the study. Men and women, people that are tall and short, students majoring in business, the liberal arts, the sciences, these are all controlled studies. So, turning to slide 12, the most powerful kind of experiment involves random assignment. The benefit is that it nullifies, statistically, all pre-existing confounders, whether they're known or unknown. Take a look at the picture. Supposing that a small proportion, say 20% of the population, has some feature, factor of interest that's related to the outcome, but it may be unobservable, like persistence in an employee. And we've got a training program, but if we randomly assign new employees to treatment and control, we can statistically expect we're going to have the same percentage of persistent, high persistence employees in both groups. And so high persistence can't be an explanation for a difference in the outcome. This is the gold standard random assignment. To review, what are the benefits of the study design? Well, the longitudinal study controls for the confounders that don't change over time, such as race and gender, whereas a cross-sectional study controls for the confounders that do change over time. And random assignment controls for all pre-existing confounders. You'll see this as we work with articles in the news. Finishing off with randomness and error, slide 15, we've got two terms, a population. It's some large group of interest. It could be the population of the state, the city. It could be all the people that go to a hospital. A sample is any part of the population. A sample doesn't necessarily have to be a good sample. A representative sample is one that's similar in various ways to the whole population. But getting a representative sample with people, we have so many characteristics, it's almost impossible to get a representative sample on everything, especially the things that are unknown, unobservable character traits. A random sample, it's a statistical thing. Each member of the population is equally likely to be selected. The benefit of a random sample is it's most likely to yield a representative sample on all factors, known and unknown. This is why we shuffle cards. We don't try and stack the deck in any particular way. We do it randomly. We say, this is going to be the best way so that every player gets a representative hand, representative of the entire population. Now, this doesn't guarantee it, as anybody that's played cards knows. Just because half the cards are red doesn't mean you're going to have half the cards dealt to you as red. Next, under randomness, the most common way that randomness appears in the media is margin of error. The phrase doesn't appear, but typically there's a plus and minus error amount. So a survey may say there was a 3% or 3 percentage point margin of error, or just plus or minus 3%. Now, this only measures sampling error. It doesn't measure any of the other kinds of errors that could be present. From this, we can build a confidence interval, typically a 95% confidence interval, the range that we believe contains the population statistic, and we believe this with a 95% confidence. 95% of the intervals will contain the population statistic. How do you form them? You take whatever statistic you've got in your sample, and you either subtract or add to get the low and high end of your confidence interval. Now, at this point, you don't see any benefit in it. Turn to the next slide, slide 17. Statistically significant means that something is very unlikely, if due just a chance. Getting all 13 cards in a random deal would be statistically significant. Okay. Studies have found a statistically significant difference between men and women in the percentage who dream in color. Women are more likely to dream in color than men. Check that out with the next 5 or 6 people you meet and see how it works. Pulling it all together in slide 18, if two statistics have overlapping confidence intervals, then their difference is not statistically significant. If they don't overlap, the difference is statistically significant. This is how you can use margin of error to create confidence intervals, check for overlap, and determine whether the difference is unlikely if due to chance. The bottom of slide 18, supposing we had unemployment at 8% last year and 10% this year, but it's based on a very small sample where the margin of error was 1 percentage point. So when we form our confidence interval around 8, it goes from 7 to 9. We form our confidence interval around 10, it goes from 9 to 11. These two confidence intervals touch. They overlap. The difference is not statistically significant. The last topic is bias. Slide 19. Respondent bias. Remember, we've got three kinds: respondent, measurement, and sampling. There's some particular forms of respondent bias that are very important. Placebo effect, where people believing they're getting something that works respond even when they're getting a placebo, a fake pill. The Hawthorne effect in management, people behave differently when they're being observed. And finally, the safety effect. You may have an increase in risky behavior, driving faster, when the subject knows they have safer equipment, anti-locking brakes. Measurement bias. Researcher bias is a very common form where the researcher, if the researcher knows who's in which group, then that may cause them to generate a biased conclusion about the group's behavior performance. It can be positive in the halo effect when the researcher thinks the group is a good one. It can be the devil or horns effect when the researcher has a negative view about the group. No matter what they do, it will never be enough. The third kind is sampling bias. The most common form here is non-response. Think of all the telephone surveys that go unanswered because people have caller ID, or once they realize it's a survey, they say nope and hang up. Or, among those that start, there may be completion or dropout bias. In both cases, it's bias if the people that don't take the survey are different in ways related to the survey questions than those that complete the survey. Again, there's no formulas for this. We have to think critically about the statistics and wonder, is this statistic a result of sampling bias? Well, how can we minimize these things? There are two common techniques for minimizing bias. A single-blind study, in slide 22, blinds the subject as to which group they're in. This minimizes respondent bias. They don't know whether they're getting the real pill or the placebo. The double-blind study blinds the researcher as well as the subject, so we take out researcher measurement bias. Double-blind study is the gold standard study. Fortunately, it's not possible in some environments. To wrap this up, Slide 23. The media stories typically omit critical details. They just don't have time. So if the story doesn't say random assignment, then we must default, assume it's not random. If they don't say it's experiment, assume observation. If they don't say it's longitudinal, assume cross-sectional. If they don't give exact definitions, assume there was some opportunism in selecting the definitions. If they don't say random selection, you assume that it was a convenience sample. If they don't give you the sample size, assume it was small. If they don't give you the questions in a survey, assume that there could be measurement bias. In conclusion, slide 24, take care. Statistics can be influenced by C for context, A for assembly, R for randomness, E for error. But comparisons, study design, random selection can block or nullify some of these influences. Thank you.